Hello, Internet. This is ESE Insight calling. It's another daily show, and I'm still Ewan Spence.
I'm Charlene Wright.
I'm Donna Sluggett.
And I'm Ian Cunningham.
We seem to be gaining another voice. Well, it's Eurovision, and it is getting busier. Coming up on the show, do you want to chase the jury? Do you want to chase the televote? Are you worried about your performance? Are you a morning person? Yes, good afternoon, good morning, good evening. Welcome once more to the Daily Podcast from the team here at ESE Insight and all our friends of the parish as well. There's live streams going on, there's blogs going on throughout the rehearsals, and we're here to gather up some of those pieces and try and make a coherent sense about why everybody is doing everything in purple, Charlene.
Oh, I have no answer for that. Pink and purple, too much of it.
What happened? Was there a memo?
Well, today I don't think there was. I think they found the switch for the other colour palette.
Yeah, we did find yellow today. That was nice. And we found the Wizard of Oz House Has Fallen on the stage switch as well. So we've got that. But yeah, it's a strange place. We'll come to all of that in a minute. Charlene, of course, keeping me right on ESE Insight and probably the longest serving insider after me by about a second.
Yeah, when you came up and said, let's start a website. Okay.
Yeah, there we go. That's the Delta difference. Thanks, Oslo. Well done. Right then, or Moscow, or before that. It's lost to time. Also joining us from ESE Fan TV, it's the Margot and Jerry of live blogging, Donna and Ian. Welcome along.
Hi, Ewan. How are we doing?
Not bad. We've got a good life going on here. How about you two?
Yeah, not too bad. Sitting through all of those rehearsals today. Oof.
Yep, we're at the end of... We've seen all the semi-finalists now. Before we go just rattle through the songs for today, what has caught your eye out of the... Does the maths in his head very quickly? 33 songs.
Oof. Just after today, Bulgaria and a Little Rock. The lovely visuals for Portugal. The interesting staging from Switzerland. And the sheer rock fun of Finland.
Yeah. And looking at all of those entries, Charlene, what's caught you?
I would actually mirror most of that. Definitely go with Finland. I thought Switzerland definitely had me wondering. Bulgaria as well. Very emotive. Loved it.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I'm still, you know, how much Austria has lifted itself up with the visuals is still one of those lovely moments for me as well. And just the visual, wonderful assault that we got from Goa and Ukraine.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Yeah, if we're counting yesterday's stuff as well, then absolutely one of my favourite moments.
Right then, let's rattle off and have a look at the songs that took to the stage today at the Ahoy Theatre in Rotterdam. We'll start off with someone who's probably created a brand new genre of Eurovision song all on his own. It's the morning grumble core before coffee of Tornike Kipiani and you.
Absolutely. You can't describe him further than
he's not a morning person.
He's not a morning person. I don't know if he wanted to be there, but you know what? He did it. He paced and placed. That's what he did. It's rehearsal. That's what he's there for. And we know that because he played it up at the end on the very last run through. He went through every vocal that I can think of, the deep, the high, the I'm not going to be bothered and I'll just do it very, very slowly.
And let's not forget his classic interpretation of dum-de-dum-dum.
That was a moment. Yes. That was a moment.
But you won't see it on the night because it's rehearsals. And when it comes to the time to be focused, he's proven in previous songs and national finals and talent shows in Georgia, he can't beat the focus. Moving over to Albania, Angela taking to the stage with Karma.
Yeah, that was fabulous. I believe I would sum this up as Bond Girl meets Fuego. It's just got this lovely stage minimalistness, actually, in silhouetting. And also body movements like Iveta, I can never remember how he's sort of say her name, for Love Wave from
Armenia.
You know what I mean, yeah. brain today, seriously. But yeah, just the way she kind of moves is that kind of sultry sexiness as well. And it's deliberately placed. It's very minimalist. I love it.
Portugal and the Black Mamba, Love Is On My Side, with literally the Wizard of Oz opening. Starts in 4-3 and black and white. You know, house hasn't fallen on, but it's close enough. And we just push in. And as we push in, the time winds forward to the end of the relationship.
This was beautiful for me. It's something that I never had on my radar. I really love the nostalgia of it. I love the golden colours. I love the silhouettes of the orchestra at the back. And then this beautiful moving storytelling along the side screen as well. The thing that I have down here in my notes, though, is nice video. Shame about the song.
Oh, well, let's see. That's a that's two 1980 sitcoms references that we've got in already. And yeah, Donna, you know, just looking at us lost. Great. No more deep cuts, Charlene. If I'm not allowed them, you're not allowed them. Okay. right then.
Young, okay.
Okay. Well, you can do the Titanic one for Bulgaria then, Donna.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. How beautiful was that? A lovely controlled, neat performance, looked stunning on stage, from very intimate to this epic scale as it pulled back with the lighting. Yeah, this is, that's great. I think it's done a really good job with it.
It's isolation on a little rock, let's put it that way.
Is it a rock or a boat?
It's a rock in the shape of a boat. I think she's kind of stranded on her own little island. You've got the water thing underneath as well. And she gets her own little sand jet as well, which is nice. Yeah.
And actual sand, and the hand going in just to prove, no, it's real sand. It's not an AR effect. We're doing this old school.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Yeah, and then she almost gets to the point where you just stands there and gives it the Titanic.
It's almost near, almost far. And give it the remote pressure wherever you are. It's all going on in there as well. Blind Channel from Finland. Everybody will say LinkedIn Park. LinkedIn Park.
LinkedIn Park.
It's the social network of new metal.
Oh, look, this one is straight out of the UMK playbook, obviously. They didn't change the staging too much. The one thing I did notice is the missing middle finger, but that's apparently painted red. I didn't see that in the amount of red colouring that they had lighting-wise. But it's bold, it's fiery, it's loud. I loved it.
Yeah, it's kind of Route 1 what you would expect. They will struggle to make eye contact because they're looking at the ground, because that's what you do. But it mixes in the modern elements of rap with the older elements of new metal. So straight ahead, I suspect that's going to do very well on the telly vote. Maybe not so on the jury, but we'll come on to that in a second. After that, finally making it to the Eurovision Song Contest stage. It is our hero. I was going to line up all the other song titles now, but we'd run out of time in the podcast if I did that. Samantha Teen and The Moon Is Rising.
Oh my, the queen is back. There she is in that emerald green and presence on stage, in this massive, busy thing behind her that just, it gives a grandiose, doesn't it?
Yeah, she is fantastic. Her voice is incredible. You see how far she pulls that mic back to hit the big notes. That is incredible.
Yet it all still feels kind of restrained.
Yes.
Yeah.
You feel that there's a lot more to give, definitely.
Yeah, she's not fully trying yet. Yeah. And when she does, oh boy.
Yes, there may well be more to come from The Voice. But, you know, again, I just get the feeling that there's been a quiet message going around all the delegations. Don't do too big a thing in your staging. I think Bulgaria's the one that's got the biggest prop I've seen so far, because I can't quite work out the scale of what Ireland's trying to do. Following that, we had Switzerland and Jan's Tears there doing his best to do a sort of monochrome end of Labyrinth, David Bowie, H.R. Geiger, Escher look.
Yeah, look, it is beautiful to see. I was trying to think of what it reminded me of. There was like elements of like a little bit of Christian Kostov staging, Loic. I thought of all of that. And then I was also trying to think of the word to describe it. And there was like words like very niche. And just the thing that strikes me, though, that makes me feel uncomfortable with saying that this is a winner is the actual lyrical contemporary dancing that he's doing on the platform, which I find he doesn't really look that comfortable in performing it, but his vocals are incredible. So I've got to balance that out and say, not getting the winner vibes, but it was beautiful to look at.
I've got art house. I've got art house written down here as the word.
Yeah. Art house.
And of course, it does answer us one very important question. What happened to Denmark's chair that gave me nightmares? Thankfully, the Swiss took an axe to it, so Denmark was forced to go back to 1985 and find a Freddie Mercury impersonator who fancied a go at doing some Spandau Ballet songs.
You've probably nailed it on the head there, really. Oh my gosh, bless him. And then when he does his little run down to the second satellite stage,
and
it just
takes the microphone out of this microphone stand out of this stand, and he's got, he's got his little magic stick in there. Oh. It is absolute cliche bingo of everything you would expect from a song from 1985.
Yeah. And it's not a bad thing for it.
No, I mean, after that final run at the end, I think a lot of people are just going to be going, at least I know where this one's going.
Back to pink and purple?
Back to pink and purple, yes.
Yes.
So, yeah, as always, we've got our discussion points, and you're welcome to leave some in the comments back at our website or join in with the debates there as well, escinsight.com. And, of course, if you're looking to follow everything as it goes on live on stage, you've got ESC Fan TV, which is lurking over at youtube.com/thatname as well. Not youtube.com/thatname. I have no idea who that will be. I mean, youtube.com/escfanTV. That will work out. But one of the interesting things that we've got here is just how more difficult semi-final two seems to call. And I never like the idea of saying that one semi-final is easier and one semi-final is harder, because that's so subjective. But in terms of the sort of spread of opinions, all the songs in semi-final two seem to be much closer. And that means that it's even more important to nail the performances, because a smaller error will lead to a bigger drop in semi-final two, I think, compared to semi-final one.
Yeah, I've got to admit, I have to agree. And from what we've seen just in a few rehearsals today, the staging that's been presented has made such a difference to some pre-opinion already. Say, Portugal, for instance, where we weren't quite sure whether this was going to be a hit or a miss, and it had mixed opinions, and then they brought out this lush staging with the visuals today and focused more on him than the rest of the band. And I think it has that extra potential now. It really does. I think, are they probably going for the jury vote? But that's the next question. I think we're all prepared to say that our favourites were more in the first semi than the second semi, so it did make this one a bit more tricky.
For me, the reason why I can't necessarily compare is because there is such a contrast between the styles of the semi-final two. I think it's far more eclectic. So you're not looking at like we did see in semi one, where there was a lot of, I guess, and I hate using the word female bangers, that you're able to go, well, that was better, that was staged better, the vocals were better on this one. You just don't have that comparison in semi two, because ultimately you've got rock, you've got these beautiful ballads, you've got some real arty sort of deliveries. There's just so much to choose from. There's something for everyone.
It's really easy to compare like from like, and that's one of the problems with going sawtooth in a contest, because a sawtooth separates out the things. If we go back to semi-final one, you know, when let's take two of those high energy songs that are next to each other. You know, you got Cyprus followed by Croatia. Now, if they were back to back at home, it'd be really easy for you to go, which one of those do I like more? Which one is better? But they don't. They've got Norway in the middle of them spinning up. Mm. And that makes it harder for someone at home to make the comparison, because what they'll actually be doing is a comparison between Cyprus and Norway and Norway and Croatia. I will put the links into the scientific papers, if I can remember to do them, back on Insight, because there's been a lot of things about comparative analysis that you have in talent shows that go through. So it makes it harder to compare, but at the same time, we as fans, of course, we can see that there's five of them in there, and we can just jump on YouTube and we do play them back to back. Semi-final two, you've got much less in terms of actual comparisons. How do you judge if Finland is any good as a new metal band? Because there isn't another new metal band to act as a yardstick. You know, and even let's even make the assumption that you had Finland and Italy back to back in the grand final, which I don't think they do because they go, well, that's two guitars. No, separate them out. You still really couldn't compare them because they're different genres. So that's what I think makes semi-final two harder, Charlene. It's much harder for us to find direct comparisons.
Yeah, and when they are there, they're obviously separated by some number of songs, not just a pure sawtooth like we saw in semi one, where you've got, yep, okay, we've got a banger, now we've got something else, we've got another banger, now we'll have something else, which was really obvious when we were running through it the other day. It was just insane to
obviously
listen to.
That was incredibly scripted, and we spotted that in careful analysis. We didn't just work that out when we did the third song, and I went, I better keep using the same phrase here. It's magic of podcasting, everybody. Magic of podcasting.
The only comparison that I could really think of came yesterday, which was actually Estonia and Austria, where you had two very proficient male singers singing something very similar genre, but staged very differently as well. So it's all down to, I guess, opinion on that.
Yeah.
I preferred Austria.
Yeah. And Donna, you could argue that Poland and Denmark are the same, just about, if you squeeze your eyes.
Yeah, just about.
Just about, but, you know, the colours would match. You could, like, oh, right, that'd be lovely. Get one of those 3D Viewmasters and see if they connect up. But again, they're separated by 11 songs.
Yes, exactly.
You know, okay, yeah, they were drawn top half and bottom half, so they've got to build in that separation as well. And I think... So when you're doing a comparison... as if you're at home, you're actually sort of comparing the song with itself. You're comparing your own expectations to the reality of what you're seeing. And that's where the performative element makes it much harder, because if you're comparing it to itself, you can't afford to deviate from what people are expecting or what people are seeing in the build-up in terms of fluffs, mistakes, wrong camera angles, wrong placing, something just a little bit off with the sound.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose when it comes to Finland, they've set themselves out into a kind of gig scenario, haven't they? And because they know there's going to be nothing else like them, they may as well do what they do best and then amplify it with extra lighting, extra fire, and do it well.
They will never be a gig with more fire than this one.
No, unless Jorn had qualified, and then we might have had more.
Yeah, but then Blind Channel wouldn't be at the gig with fire, so that's there true. We go. But yeah, I mean, what else? I mean, look, let's just have a look down the list there. You know, Portugal is comparing. Here's the interesting thing with Portugal, Charlene. You're actually comparing the end of the song with the beginning of the song, because they've made this clear delineation, both in colour and in aspect ratio on the television screen. The smart cookies start in 4:3 and then move out to 16:9.
Yeah, and it is. And that's where you see that development come in, and that's why I think I enjoyed it so much. It did have that storytelling element to it, which none of the others mimicked in any way. So again, you can't compare them.
Yeah, I mean, Bulgaria does have story elements going on, but in a completely different way. It's a much more staged storyline as opposed to a televisual storyline.
Yeah, it's got a very theatrical look to it, and it's not big and dramatic either for Bulgaria. It's very close, it's very gentle.
Mm.
It does build an epic scale, but yeah, it doesn't look like a big arena TV thing. It looks like an intimate theatre piece.
Yeah.
And that's nice. Again, yeah, and it works well with that song. It's one of the ones that works really well with the song. Not all of them have quite matched up, but this one really does.
And I'm also, so far, I think it's the biggest prop we've seen.
Yes, biggest and, well, apart from, it's not the biggest movable prop if you count the Russian dress, but... Yeah, actually, as a platform prop, yes, I would say it is.
It's such a weird, you know, let's jump into Switzerland with the same idea, because here, here it's harder to compare the song to itself because there isn't a lot of change in the song. It starts off with your presentation, with your blocks, and he's on the blocks. And as it moves through, yeah, you're getting movement apart from the camera, you're getting movement apart from the backdrop, but the song kind of stays relatively static. And while the song's been really rated, I think that staging makes it harder to judge itself.
The thing that creates the movement on this one, actually, I think, is the camera work and the angles that it takes, and obviously really close-up elements of just even his face with an ear or a piece of hair or his eyes or whatever. So you really are feeling very intimate in that, which none of the other songs deliver that. And I was just trying to think then when we were going back through things, are there any songs in Semi 1 that give that emotive feeling that you would feel in Bulgaria or Switzerland? Or I don't think that there is.
No, I think the... I mean, if you really, really, you know, expanded the envelope, you could maybe argue Slovenia, but you would be on a sugarly peg. I wouldn't like to take that one into combat. Yeah. So Switzerland in that respect stands alone.
Yeah.
So here we go. But yes, as Donna alluded to earlier, jury, public, yeah, it's dead simple. To win the Eurovision Song Contest, you've got to score more points than anybody else. You've got to score one more point than anybody else, because I don't think you can get halves. You can get a draw, need to be earlier in the running order, but yeah, you've got to score as many points as you can. Where you get those points, how you gather them, where you put your focus is one of the interesting tactical decisions that delegations, songwriters, producers, designers, and the artists themselves have to face. So let's start at Switzerland. Charlene, it's gunning for the jury vote, isn't it?
It is gunning for the jury vote, but I can also see it getting a healthy telly vote as well. It just won't be as healthy as the jury. I could definitely see this topping the jury vote in this semi-final. But when it comes to the final and it's going to be then compared with, say, France, I think it's going to lose out because it's not as accessible.
Yeah. Let's focus on the mechanics on the grand final, right? Obviously, the same principle is going to apply to the semi-finals, but there you're just trying to get into the top 10. When you get to the grand final, you're trying to be top one. And it is essentially, I've always regarded it in the last couple of years, this is like a two-legged game of football. You know, you've got game one, where you're playing to the jury, and game two, where you're playing to the public at home. And then you add the scores. The sort of rubber band connection that there used to be when they combined the scores, so you're kind of looking at a kind of rough average, that's no longer there. There's no connections. Like, you can do 100% of the jury and 0% of the public, and you get 50%. There isn't a sort of drag being applied. That was a bad choice of the number. But what it means is you can decide just to go all in on one of those options. You can decide, you know what? I don't think the song is going to be a televote song. Let's just not bother. Let's just focus on what we think the juries will go for. And on the other side, well, we don't think that this song is going to appeal to the jury. So let's just go all in on the televote. And if we look at that split, then, oh, Finland. Let's take Finland, for example. That is quite, in my mind, and looking at the UMK results, bears out, gunning straight for the televote. It's just like, you know what? Jury's going to be what jury's going to be. We are just going to go for the people at home.
Oh, absolutely. That is a clear televote. And the results from the UMK stand for. So I could see this really rallying the troops when it comes to all the rock fans out there in a very similar way to Lordi, obviously not as big as Lordi, but going for their own home base, going for the rocks. Hey, tune in to Semi 2. We're performing. Vote for us.
And then again, you have other songs that are, well, everybody's heard the term jury catnip. That's what we're going for here.
Yes, there are quite a few that could tick those boxes. I think perhaps Bulgaria might have this as well with the lush lyrical metaphors that she's gone for there. And now added with this staging as well, the isolation that matches the mood of this being written in COVID. That just screams jury for me.
And the interesting thing is, if they were head-to-head... You know, I mean, this boils it down to make it quite simplistic, but that's useful when we then they blow it back up to the 39 contest. You have a song that is primarily aimed at jury and a song that is primarily aimed at televote. But if they both, let's say they both won, it's how well they do with the other side that would actually determine the victor. And see, if you go all in, you that's much higher tariff than, you know, maybe we need to just keep a little bit of mind of what the jury's going to do, a little bit of mind in what the televote's going to do as well. So even though you have primacy in one, you still need to appeal to the other one.
Yeah, it's a bit similar with Daddy as well. Daddy's going to be an interesting one. And not only because he's a returner, obviously, from last year, and the public opinion is that he's a favourite. They liked him. He could have possibly won last year. This is also still a strong production he's got. He's been marketing the social media crazily. And, you know, he's even presenting himself with QR codes so that people can actually, like, get the link to his game that he's got linked to this as well. So if anyone was going for the televote this year, it's Daddy Fleer. But the writing in this song is very, very clever. There's lots of allusions to Eurovision references as well of the past. And he's brought some of that into the staging. And it's written about his wife. So there are elements that are going to appeal to the jury here as well. Strong televote, I think, but it's a good example where they could gain that extra on the other side, I think.
I think for Davy as well, I would argue that he does have a good chance of a jury vote because that recognition is going to carry on into the jury. There is going to be that expectation. There's also going to be a bit of a story to tell behind it that there's a propelling of Iceland as a country. We need to award them. We couldn't get that chance last year. Let's carry it on to this year, and we'll see that propelled through in the jury vote as well. The recognition will come through.
Yeah. And also, this is probably the most personal song that anybody's put into this year's competition. You know, it's about him, his wife, his family. You know, that and his wife's there on stage, so that will definitely appeal to juries. It'll appear to the public as well, obviously, when they get, if they understand and get the story that this is very much a family thing, and the juries will like that as well. That's the one of the things that I think will give them a good balance as well between the two sides.
And also we've seen this in previous contests where there's been such a diverse opinion that it just makes things feel a little bit awkward at the end. With Sweden, last couple of years in Sweden has been a song that looks like it's going to do well with the televote, and it's got lots of public appeal, but it doesn't. Yet the juries are still, yeah, you know, however they do with chart potential or staging or impressiveness, or they just really like that hotel in Stockholm and the idea of getting Fika in the press room. It just never, Sweden never quite catches it. And I wonder, you know, I don't see Voices changing that formula. It's still a song that feels like we're going for the jury and, you know he's got a strong televote in Sweden, but nobody in Sweden can vote for Sweden at Eurovision.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that. Sweden have this track record that it's almost too slick for its own good sometimes. And he's got an incredible backstory involved in this as well, with him as a person. So it's very convincing that it's going to be a jury aimer. And he's, on the other side of things, he's had some interesting racial hate as well, hasn't he, just recently. So I don't know, he's going to be mixed opinions for people perhaps as a person. Is that going to transfer over to his song?
Yeah, I think without knowing his backstory and what he's done and achieved to get to where he is, which is an incredible journey for a very young man, if you don't understand that, you might not get the depth behind it. And it then comes across as a lovely bit of super slick Swedish pop music,
yeah.
Which they're great at doing. There's no doubt about that. This is something Sweden are brilliant at. But I always think it's a little bit too polished, a little bit too slick, and it lacks some of the guts and emotion that other songs bring in. I think that's probably the biggest hindrance to Sweden in the public vote.
Yeah. And there we go there. But before we do our goodbyes, I think it is worth picking up on that point about some pretty nasty comments that are going around the internet as a whole about some of the artists this year, and especially some of the other artists. We've mentioned two of there, but the reaction to Destiny's personal choices has been ugly. And look, yes, it's the internet, but that is not an excuse. I don't want to see that in my Eurovision.
No, it was absolutely shocking what happened after Destiny performed. And it was almost instant as well. Not just the fact, she's lost the elastic in her boot or whatever, and it looks weird, blah, blah, blah. But the fact that some were saying terrible things about her size in that kind of outfit, and it's her choice. She wanted that. She feels confident in that, and she's going to go out and get it. But people don't get that message initially. So they just ripped on her. It was terrible.
I was just going to say that I think it's really disappointing, particularly that it's coming from the fandom, the Eurovision fandom, that is meant to be so open, and the contest is meant to be about bringing people together. And all we're doing is tearing ourselves apart by making these terrible comments about people and their personal choices or their backstory or the color of their skin. We need to move forward as people. Get rid of the hate. I think Jendrik's got a really good story to tell this year when it comes to that.
Yeah, and at an individual level, call it out. If you're sitting there going, but somebody else has written that and I don't want to argue on the internet, you know, call it out, report it. If it's on, for example, if it does show up on the Eurovision.tv's Facebook page, because there's a lot of comments going on there, there's a report button. Press that. Call it out in whatever way works for you, because that's how we're going to move forward. You know, we've had so many great slogans at the contest that are meant to reflect the attitudes of the contest. We got open up this year, you know, in a world where we really all like to open up. But at the same time, it's also about opening yourself up to new ideas, to new ways of thinking. We've had celebrate diversity. Sorry, did everybody forget that one for a moment?
Yeah, I'm thinking about building bridges and just so many slogans out there that clearly have been forgotten by people. And I think we also need to remember that these artists are people too. They're like us. Really, they are. And they've got the emotions, the feelings. They're going to react to these. I think of also people like Montaigne, who's really going through a very tough time at the moment. We need to be empathetic to this situation.
Obviously, fandom is not one solid block of people. There are some wonderful comments. There are people supporting the artists. There are people that are starting these discussions and educating people about what is on stage, what is being talked about, what issues are there, what's becoming more visible on stage. That's what makes Eurovision wonderful, the fact that we can look at all of that stuff. So I want to see more of that in my community.
And we saw that in the support that came out for Vasil when people attacked him for his nationality or his heritage. Not his nationality, he is North Macedonian, but used it as an attack on his homosexuality, and it wasn't just a direct attack. It was they used a means to get at him, and it was horrible. The community rallied round, and a huge amount of love came from him, and he got that message straight back to him, brought him along greatly. It does work. It does help. If we call it out, it will make a difference to people. We can't just be passive. You have to, if you see it, call it out and become part of the solution to this, not just part of the problem.
And so there we go, another daily podcast down, another look at the wide, wide world of the Eurovision Song Contest, from the highest highs to the lowest lows. We will have all of that and more as we head towards the live shows next week and the rapidly approaching grand final on Saturday, the 22nd of May. There are many, many voices that you can listen to out there, not just ourselves at ESCinsight.com. There's ESC Fan TV who have joined us now. Ian Donnett, great to have you along. How's the live stream going?
It's been busy. We've been doing reactions after each of the rehearsals as we see them as well. So there's plenty of material up there for you to go and see. Our instant responses on each of the performances so far. And there'll be much more to come as we get close to the contest.
And back at AC Insider, of course, we have our articles as well. I've got one on staging and empty space on the stage and how it's an important thing about portraying your act. That's coming up. We're going to be looking in the next couple of days about the legacy that the Netherlands have had at the Eurovision Song Contest. Charlene, you're looking at another couple of issues around the contest as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Following on from what we were just talking about, we're looking at sort of mental health and coping in the COVID crisis for the artists, how things have changed for them, what the support structures are for them as well. And I hope to also look at the issue of bullying. So obviously it's a hot topic. Thank you, Jendrik. So I'll look at that and obviously some of the examples we have seen that we've discussed today.
And we'll have details about the contest as well. So, you know, we're not forgetting, there is a TV show at the end of all of this, even though it does hold up a lovely mirror onto society. So we've got our free guidebook that's available now. You can download that as a PDF, as a Mobi or an EPUB file, so you can get them onto all your electronic digital readers, smartphones, tablets, steam-powered desktops, and all of that as well. No doubt we'll have the fun and games of the Spotter's Guide when we get round to the live shows as well. So do keep an eye on the website, escinsight.com. And if you want to support us, you could do so for the price of an artisan coffee a month over at patreon.com/ESEinsight, where we'll give you a little bit more insight into how we do things and the occasional extra podcast. But for now, thanks for listening to today's show. Thank you to Ian and Donna.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Lovely to be on.
And thank you also to Charlene Wright.
Thank you, Ewan. Great to be back.
You're still not getting rid of me. Time for the guitars. Today's Daily Podcast was hosted by Ewan Spence with Charlene Wright, Ian Cunningham, and Donna Sluggin. Find out more at www.escinsight.com.